very much, Alan. Then we continue with our next topic, which is business combinations under common control. Julia.
Thank you, Hans. Good morning. So I bring the agenda paper 2A. This agenda paper provides relevant background to the ISP project on business combinations under common control and discusses potential scope of the project. This paper does not set out staff recommendation or staff preliminary views. Rather, it discusses the interaction between various types of transactions that could be included within the scope of the project and six thoughts on how narrow or how broad the scope of the project should be. And based on the discussion today, the staff will consider the outcomes of this discussion in developing the recommendation for the ISB. A couple of words on the background. Today, business combinations under common control are excluded from the scope of IFRS 3. And arguably, business combinations under common control are different from other business combinations because exchange price might be not representative of fair value of the businesses exchanged. And also, the purpose of business combinations under common control could be different from a purpose of a normal business combination between unrelated parties. So in 2008, the ISB decided to add the project on business combinations under common control to its agenda. At that time, the ISB decided to look at the definition or description of business combinations under common control, to look at separate and consolidated financial statements of the acquirer, and also to look at demergers. However, in 2009, the project was put on hold due to financial crisis and change priorities. And then in 2011, in a gender consultation, business combinations under common control were identified as a high priority project that the ISB should address. However, the views on how narrow or how broad the scope of the project is very mixed. Some constituents believe that it should be a narrow scope project looking just at business combinations under common control, and some constituents believe that a comprehensive project might be needed. So with that, we are now considering the scope of the project and business combinations under common control. And I think the best way to talk about the scope would be to look at the examples in agenda paper 2A on page 6 and 7. So in all those examples, there is a demerged business S1. In example one, the business is demerged but remains under the control of the same immediate parent. Accordingly, this is not a business combination under common control because there are no combining entities or businesses, but it is a transaction under common control. Another example of transaction under common control would be a sale of assets within a group or a group of assets. In example two, the demerged business is moved to a new intermediary parent within the group, business A. So that would be an example of business combination under common control. And lastly, in example 3, the demerged business does not stay within the group. It is disposed to public shareholders. Accordingly, this is not a business combination or a transaction under common control. However, there is an interaction with broader new basis issues. So if we will consider the options for the scope, the ISB could decide to look just at business combinations under common control, which are represented by example 2 in the agenda paper. Under this project, the ISB could look at definition or description of business combinations under common control, and the ISB would also need to decide whether to consider separate or and consolidated financial statements of the acquirer. And the ISB could also consider whether to address accounting by the acquiree, by the acquired entity as part of that project. Now, if the ISB were just to look at business combinations under common control, there are questions about what this means for other transactions under common control, and there could be inconsistencies in accounting treatment. So, for example, if the ISB were to decide that business combinations under common control are accounted for under fair value method, does it mean that all transactions under common control need to be accounted under fair value rather than transaction value? If the ISB were to decide that business combinations under common control were to be accounted for under predecessor method. Again, the question arises, what does it mean for other transactions under common control, and should they be accounted for under predecessor method as opposed to transaction price? If we look at the interaction with the new basis accounting issues, if the ISB were to go with narrow scope and decided that business combinations under common control were to be accounted under fair value, that would result in different accounting outcomes where, for example, in example 2, new business S1 is acquired by entity A and then transferred to public shareholders, as opposed to a situation where business S1 is transferred directly to public shareholders. In one case, public shareholders would get fair value information. In the other case, public shareholders would get predecessor value information. Likewise, if the ISB were to decide that business combinations under common control are to be accounted for under predecessor value method, then in example 2 and example 3, the accounting outcome would be the same. However, it would be different compared to an accounting outcome in a situation where the disposed business is acquired by another unrelated parent, which in its turn is owned by public shareholders. So there is a lot of interaction, and I think with that I should probably stop and see what are the thoughts on the scope.
It's all very clear and simple. Thank you, Julia, for this clear introduction to a difficult issue. Russ?
Sure, thanks. I think this is a very challenging issue. In the U.S., we've had GAAP that deals with business combination under common control. It's been analogized to asset acquisitions for transactions under common control. So I want to separate the common control transaction to your other new basis questions. I think they're completely different. We went out and talked to a lot of users. They like the carryover basis for common control transactions under the theory that it can just be restructured. If the same entity owns both, there's no substance in the transaction, so they like to do it. There are some interesting journal entries that occur when you have one subsidiary pay cash to the other subsidiary, and they pay cash at fair value, but the carryover basis at cost, we call it a dangling debit, but it just becomes a transaction in equity. U.S. GAAP does not define common control. It just says common control. Practice has been able to interpret it. There are very, very few questions for public companies. There are questions in private companies, specifically when you have families, when you have the father that then divests to one child the operating company and to another child the real estate company. And there's a question about what happens when the father is no longer there. Is it still common control and those kind of things? But practice has been able to deal with it. With respect to your new basis questions, that we have been struggling in the U.S. for a number of years to deal with all the various types of new basis questions, and that if you go down that path, I think that will lengthen your project substantially. And so I would encourage you to determine what you want in a transaction under common control and finish that before you start new basis. The new basis questions that we deal with in the U.S. are what happens when you contribute assets to a joint venture. You can get different answers if two parties contribute assets versus one party contributes assets, one party contributes cash. You have a difference in U.S. GAAP is what's called pushdown accounting. That is when a party comes in and the party, the new owner is private, but the company itself is public, and do you push down the basis? The EITF has recently exposed for public comment a change that would allow that to be optional. Right now it's required over a certain level, optional within a certain level, so it would be optional for all. That will reduce a substantial number of questions around whether or not the control group and the various parties with the control group. But in the end, I think you should do something on common control. I think the diversity you observe needs to be resolved. Would encourage you to have no new basis event in transaction and common control. And would separate that from any new basis.
Encourage
you to not have a new basis in transactions under common control. In other words, carryover basis, because I don't believe it's a substantive transaction. And would encourage you not to do new basis within that same project. But I do think new basis is something that needs to be resolved.
Can I just start following question to that? When you say no new basis, if you've got a situation where, let's say you've got a company that acquired a subsidiary, and then subsequently that that subsidiary is transferred over, do you carry over the consolidated numbers or do you carry over the original numbers? Now, you probably could say, well, I've got pushed down, so I've got the same issue.
You carry over the consolidated
numbers. Yeah, which is, in a sense, you could, like, I don't know,
all
that's a new basis.
All I'm saying is when you move one subsidiary to another,
yeah.
That does not cause a new transaction.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying.
But, yeah. All right. But you, it's kind of, for us, it would, in a sense, be new basis in a way, because it's, you'd essentially be pushing down and then taking over the numbers. It's all right. It's not that simple. None of these are simple, unfortunately.
In the U.S., in that transaction, it would be the parent's basis
yeah.
goes with it.
Yeah.
But the point is that the transaction just moving one sub around shouldn't
yeah.
cause it could shouldn't cause a new remeasurement to current value.
Yeah. By the way, by the way, in some jurisdictions, there's pull-up accounting as well, where you amalgamate a subsidiary up into its parent, and then you argue about what numbers you have there as well.
Kim?
Thanks, Hans. Yeah, I mean, common control transactions are certainly a common problem in our jurisdiction. I think in terms of the scope, I think that, you know, I mean, it could be very broad in terms of looking at all sorts of transactions under common control. I would say that I think as a starting point to look at these types of business combination transactions under common control. And I think for me, one of the things that also sort of stood out in looking at these examples, which I must say were very useful and, you know, in illustrating some of the points, is that we obviously have guidance on business combinations in IFRS 3, and there, in identifying the acquirer, you know, one could end up with a reverse acquisition in certain instances. So what has been very interesting is in practice, even though business combinations under common control are scoped out of IFRS 3, there are instances where preparers then say, well, I actually do want to apply IFRS 3, and they sort of try and scope themselves back in. And then the real issue is well, even if they're going to apply IFRS 3, well, what answer do you get? Do you actually end up, you know, being able to fair value the legal acquiree? Or does this transaction end up by being a reverse acquisition, which basically means that you can't fair value the acquiree, which effectively takes you back to predecessor accounting by virtue of applying the reverse acquisition accounting. So, you know, I mean, as I say, obviously we've got, you know, the complexities, I say, in transactions that aren't under common control with identifying the acquirer and therefore reverse acquisitions. It would be interesting, I suppose, to try and see, you know, even if we were to bring them within the scope, do we effectively end up with the same answer that we would have even if they weren't under common control by virtue of identifying the acquirer? So I think that while I certainly can see merits in extending the project to all sorts of transactions under common control, I think to make the project manageable, you're going to need to actually focus on a few aspects before, you know, before opening it up. And yes, there could very well be instances where people then say, okay, well, does that mean that if we conclude for business combinations under common control that they are in a way like reverse acquisitions, which effectively means some form of predecessor accounting, does that mean that all transactions under common control should be on that basis? And I would say, not necessarily so, because we don't really have the concept of reverse acquisition accounting in other types of transactions other than business combinations. So there could very well be some differences. But I think that would be important for me to look at. The other thing is just to note, I think in example one, I think a lot of people in practice would actually see this as a business combination under common control. But personally, I do think that in some instances, people are, you know, trying to use IFRS 3 to get sort of fresh start accounting. But then again, I think in practice, there's divergency regarding whether or not, even if you were to apply IFRS 3, you can regard, you know, the legal acquirer as the accounting acquirer. But there are instances where, you know, people have just done a restructuring purely to try and enhance their balance sheet, and they actually would like to revalue all their assets as, you know, as a once-off. So I think, you know, there are different motivations, I think, for certain of the outcomes.
Anna?
Yes, thank you, Hans. We welcome the project because we have, in our jurisdiction, it's very common to have these. These transactions are very common, so we really welcome the project. In relation to the scope, we agree on the idea of excluding transactions in example number 3, but we would include transactions in example number 1 and number 2. Transactions, business combination on the common control, and also group transactions that are not business combination, because they have, they may have very common features, and the aim of revaluating assets and liabilities and generating goodwill. And in relation to the business combination, we believe that the project should cover the different phases of the acquisition method, not only the measurement of assets and liabilities, but also who is the acquirer and the acquiree, the date of, as Kim said, the date of acquisition, step acquisitions, and all the different phases of the method.
Can I just clarify one thing? So when you say that you would include example 1 and 2, so in example 1, I suppose, there are two different sets of things. So one would be restructurings, which some people would argue are not business combinations under common control. But then also under example 1, you could consider broader transfer pricing issues. Like what happens if you transfer a group of assets, which is not a business? What happens when you transfer an asset? So did you mean that you would also consider those transactions as part of narrow scope? Or
no.
Just group restructurings?
Yes, group restructurings.
Restructurings,
yes.
Okay. Okay.
Clement?
Yeah, thanks, Hans. Just a quick comment. In our region, definitely this is a significant issue because a lot of business combination under common control actually happened, you know, in the IPO process, and a lot of people were using merger accounting for the pro forma account and some diverse tech practices in some other jurisdiction as well. So as a general comment, definitely welcome the project. But in terms of the management of it, I think maybe it will be more sensible to start off as a narrow sort of a scope project from the angle of acquiry. But ultimately, I think the relationship with the IFRS 3 need to be considered, so as to make sure that there's no inconsistency between, you know, the proposed model with in the context of IFRS 3 as well.
Well, EFRAG together with the Italian standard setter, the OIC, has done quite some work over the last few years on this topic. Discussion paper was issued, we received comments, and one of the comments focused on an element included in the paper. What about the definition or description? We did some work on that and we came to a halt because of fear of a number of unintended consequences of changes. So we do invite the staff on this project to contact our staff to avoid redundancy of errors in thinking. Brussels is open for your visit, but we also did further work on try to find out what happens in practice within a consolidated financial statement. Constituents told us you should look at real life examples to find out whether IFRS 3 can be applied and is applied. Well, to already share our conclusions on that, it doesn't work. You don't have the information in consolidated statement you need to come to such assessment. And for understandable reasons, constituents have not opened the door for us to share with them their real life examples for a learning curve. Maybe it's easier for the ISB, but it was not for us. What we did learn is that scoping is essential. You immediately enter into debate of common control transactions in general. Don't do it. If this is on the short term project list, don't do it. It's already a challenge in itself to get this done, let's say, in a year and a half or 2 years. Another element addressed in this paper, should it be consolidated, should it be separate financial statements, or both? Our strong recommendation is focus on consolidated financial statements. That's where the lack of transparency is. In a management report, a press release, you see big disclosures about these transactions. You go to the financial statements, nil, or such general language, you don't learn anything from it. Transferor, transferee, focus on the acquirer. That's already challenging enough. But looking at the examples, and it's my last comment or recommendation, we came to the conclusion that the problems in practice are most related to those transactions where third parties are involved. Could be minority shareholders, could be the creation of minority shareholders, could be involving new external parties. So even though some of us agree with example three that it does not qualify according to the definition, example three is an area of big uncertainty. And I could argue that it does qualify because there are two steps. One, you move S from the left to the middle, the second step is you move it outside. So I could argue there are two transactions. The first is within the group, the second is outside. Well, the answer from the book is that step one is transitionary, that's why it doesn't meet the definition. Well, yeah, we see that at least some of us as form over substance, because in all type of group restructurings, in preparation for an IPO or for other reason, that's where the big difficulties come. If you do run into certain areas which might be relevant for separate financial statement, put them somewhere on the list. In a few months, we hope to publish a full discussion paper on separate financial statements under IFRS, and this is one of the topics which is addressed in that, and it will show you that there are also a lot of problems in there, but don't put anything in one big project because you will fail.
And also just to clarify, so when you said don't look at transactions under common control, presumably you mean acquisition of assets and group of assets, but group restructuring you would include in the scope of the project. Yeah.
Kevin?
Australia has an interesting history on this topic because for many years we respected the definition of a reporting entity. And so acquisitions were acquisitions. So it didn't matter whether you're under common control or not under common control. They were all treated the same. And we didn't have too many problems with all of that. And I'd have to say there was a lot of tax structuring that fell on its face as a result of it, because it, acquisition accounting doesn't suit tax structuring all the time. But we moved off that to get harmonisation with firstly IAS and then IFRS. And I think once you make that step away from acquisition accounting to something other than acquisition accounting, you'll waste your time if you're looking for a central logic to it. What we're talking about is a consistency of methodology here, and there's not going to be much else going for it, in my view. Over the last 4 or 5 years, I've heard people prattling on about how important business combinations under common control are and how it needs to be settled. I would bench test that against the policies of the big four for a start to see how many of them are actually doing these things differently. There are alternatives for transferee and transferor accounting, but are they really differences? The sort of problem that Kim raised is probably less well dealt with between the four, but as a generality, I think which form of predecessor accounting applies, you'll find is not as diverse as you think. But so all I'm saying there is I would tackle business combinations under common control, but it'd be a very limited scope project with not great ambition other than to ensure consistency. I would not tackle transactions under common control. You're basically into measurement there rather than anything else. And my antenna went up, Alan, when you mentioned the regulators. So just because the regulators are interested in spin-off accounting doesn't do a lot for me, having spent a lot of time debating with regulators spin-off accounting and seen their reservations, and I've seen their reservations largely fall over each time. I'm not convinced that there's a problem. There might be a misconception in their place, But again, I'd bench test that against the policies of the Big Four, just as a test, and see whether they're doing spin-offs any differently. I'm aware of two firms' approaches to spin-off, and they're identical. I don't know what the other two are doing. So again, make sure you've got a problem you're going to solve. And then finally, a caution on what Russ said. Nowhere have we really tackled the policy of consolidation conceptually over time, and so we've got an unspoken debate between the approach taken in America towards accounting for controlled entities compared to what's done in other places. And it only ever comes out when you start thinking about separate financial statements. So the consolidation level doesn't matter. So you just do need to be very wary of the morphing approach versus the separate entity approach, and what the consequences of that are.
Yukio?
I have two points. One is in business combination that are in acquire and acquire. In order to ensure the consistency between the accounting requirement of acquisition acquire and acquirees, so there is a in order to, you know, the, ensure the consistency, I think, you know, there is a need to address the accounting requirement of demerger. The second point is that having considered the feedback we have received in Japan, we do not believe there is a need to consider push-down accounting. But we support the ISB undertake the research on accounting requirement of business combination and the common control and some related matters.
Yan Xiao.
First of all, we supported the project because in China, maybe compared with other countries, business combination and common control is much more common compared with other countries, because in China, currently, there's still a lot of state-owned enterprises, and they are still on the process of big restructuring reform. So some of the restructuring methods are using of business combination and the common control. So we support this project. Also, in 2006, when we introduced IFRS 3 into China, actually, the business combination and common control are not included from our Chinese accounting standards. So we use the pooling method to account for business combination and common control. So we have this practice and experience, and we can provide our practice and experience to the project. With regard to the project, I have several views I want to express. First, with regard to the scope, we also supported the narrow scope. That means we should focus on the accounting for business combination and common control by the acquirer, not acquiree. So this and also this first point. And secondly, we believe that in this project, both consolidated statement and a separate statement should be considered, because they cannot be separated. For company, they have to account for both, and in China, mostly they have to account for the transaction first in a separate statement and then a consolidated statement. They cannot be separated. And the third is I think there are some actually application issues will come out, because once they use the standards business competency and common control, maybe some special application accounting issues will come out, and also push down accounting similar. For example, in China, we just issued an interpretation on the one specific issues. Suppose there is a parent company A, and this company A acquired a company B 1 year ago. That is a business combination on the non-common control. So that means the separate statement of the company B still using carry amount, because they did not use push accounting. But the parent company on the consolidated statement, it used the fair value. And 1 year later, there is another subsidiary, C, under the parent A, merged the company B. In this case, a practical issue come out, which current account should be used on the C's consolidated financial statement. Whether the carrying amount should be the subsidiary B's carrying amount or should be the fair value which has been showed under the parent A's consolidated financial statement. So this kind of special accounting issue will come out. We hope the project could resolve those new application issues. The fourth, we also actually relevant to the scope. We don't think at this statement we should address other transactions under common control, because the scope will be too broad. Also, other control transactions under common control may be relevant to the transactions with owners. And so we have to identify such as the basic concept, capital transaction or non-capital transaction. Actually, it's relevant to a consortium framework. It's too broad and too complex. So we don't think at this stage we should address this so difficult issue. And also because we have other standards such as fair value standard measurement, it's a day one. If the transaction price are not fair value, then we will record the gain and loss, day one gain and loss. And also we have the standards on related party disclosure. So those standards could do something on those other transactions we under common control.
Peter?
Thank you, Hans. Our advice to the ISB is a little bit different than what I've heard from some other people around the table. We've had a little bit of experience with this topic, although it goes back well over 20 years now, but we actually started off trying to do a project, relatively narrow scope on business combinations under common control, and the experience there was it just didn't work keeping it to a narrow scope, and we had to sort of backtrack, and we've ended up with a domestic standard that of course we've now left to come to IFRS's, but it I think was unique in the world in that it was a standard on measurement of related party transactions. But we had to have a much broader scope standard in order to make it workable. And so our advice is to, for your, at least for your research stage of the project, to make it pretty broad, and you can always narrow it down. It's rather harder to go the opposite direction if you start narrow and realize that you do need to go broader. If you've got something that's got some sort of principles behind it, and I hear Kevin suggesting maybe
you
not.
Have a standard on the shelves for us.
Sorry?
You have a standard on the shelves for us.
Yeah, we'll sell it to you very cheaply, actually. It's a little shop worn. But I wouldn't suggest that you actually copy what we came up with, but it's an example. But if you start the research broadly, you can go narrower as you need to. But one of my biases, Alan, is against standards that are relatively narrow scope, because you create boundaries that tend to cause friction in practice, because people say, they argue which side of the boundary they're on, and depending on their biases, they will push the boundaries in either direction. So I think it would cause difficulties in practice if you go sort of narrow scope. And the other thing too about scope, you know, title is business combinations under common control. We see more than a few transactions that involve companies that don't have businesses yet. So for example, exploration stage oil and gas or mining activities, there's a lot of transactions, but they're often not businesses. And I can see that happening in other industries, pharmaceutical research or high-tech research kind of thing. So, you know, you'd want to think about the different things that you might need to worry about. It's intriguing that the international regulators are sort of
in the picture here, because what we see in practice is different securities regulators taking different views on these issues. So to some extent, they're causing the friction in practice that you're trying to address. So it'd be nice to deal with that.
Okay, Alexander.
Well, we welcome the project, because I believe in my jurisdiction, business condition common control is as much importance as business condition not under common control. I will actually just suggest you to consider example number 4 here, which is a slight variation of example number 1, except for the situation when here you have P as a parent company that supposedly control IP and A. Is that correct?
Yep.
Let's just assume that P is a public company with minority shareholders. IP and A are also public companies with different shareholders from the parent company. So three different groups of minority shareholders. And IP actually acquires A.
Okay.
So it's a controlled entity, acquires another controlled entity. But the shareholders of the minority shareholders are not related.
Okay.
So that's the situation. And obviously you support the concern about separate financial statements, because as those three individual companies are public companies themselves, they have to present their individual financial statements, pay dividends under those financial statements, etc. So I believe this is the case that we, because it's easy to say, well, you cannot have, for example, goodwill in that transaction, because they are under common control. Yes, of course, but for the individual shareholder of company IP, for example, here, he doesn't care. He's not related to the to the company that's controlled, to the parent company or to the other company. For him, imagine an acquisition in cash, for example, if he pays in cash. So how do you, if it's not goodwill, how do you going to treat this?
You'd see some attention. So if we do bring in separate financial statements, we're actually into transactions now, because I think how do you account for the transfer of the shares? And so that's a tricky one. Whereas the advice, you know, for me, Frank, is stay away from transactions. And of course, there's a natural tension. I think Peter's identified between transferring a group of assets and transferring a business. We have a lot of problems at the moment, as you know, with the feedback we're getting from IFRS 3. When you have different accounting, depending on whether it's it's an asset capable being worked as a business as opposed to a business.
Yeah, but this is more of a request for you guys to deal with those separate financial statements, because in South America they are quite relevant. You know, if you address business combinations under common control, but do not address how to treat things on the individual and separate financial statements, then for us it's going to miss the
Julia, maybe just to pick up on the comment, I mean, just to understand, when people are saying that the board shouldn't address, or either shouldn't address the separates or should address the separates, are we talking about the separates of the acquiree, the legal acquiree here, or are we talking about the acquirer? Because, I mean, I certainly think that, you know, if it's an acquisition not by shares, but it's a business, but it's a group of assets, that needs to be addressed, which would therefore be in the acquirer's separate financial statements, because they, you know, consolidateds are not necessary because they're buying the actual, you know, net assets directly. So I don't think it should be a difference whether or not you're buying them directly or indirectly. If I understand, Alexandra, your comment would be in IPs.
IP is separate financials.
They are still the acquirer.
Yes.
As opposed to dealing with the acquiree. So I just wanted to understand, just to clarify, we're not trying to deal with the acquiree's separate financials.
At the end of the day, from a practical point of view, I still have to prepare the consolidated financial statements of P plus IP plus A.
Yes.
I have to prepare the separate or individual financial statements of the acquirer.
Correct.
And I have to prepare the individual financial statements of the acquiree.
Correct.
So those three financial statements exist in practice. So
But we're not looking, well, I don't know, is the board looking at dealing with the separate financial statements of the acquiree at all here? As in, are we dealing with push-down accounting and things like that? Or is the scope purely to look at the acquirers, either the acquirers separate, the acquirers individual, or the acquirers consolidated?
I think that is part of the question, do we just look at the acquirer or acquiree?
Okay.
And I think so far what I have heard, like the majority at least position was to look at the acquirer rather than acquiree.
That's right, but I would certainly support dealing with the recognition in the acquirer's separate financials if they acquired it by acquiring the net assets as opposed to acquiring shares. And therefore, it's the consolidated individual financial statements, not the acquiree's separate financial statements, as in push-down accounting, etc.
Well, just to make sure there's no misunderstanding on our suggestions, we do see there are problems in acquirer and acquiree financial statements in these transactions. But since the intention is to have a short-term research project, you have to be careful in scoping from the start. So, therefore, our recommendation is focus on the acquirer. You will identify issues which may have to be resolved at one stage in the acquiree financial statements. Put them on the list. You may find solutions while you continue, but you may have to say, sorry, that's still outside the scope. So, to be specific, we recommend not to focus on things like push-down accounting. On separate versus consolidated, yes, we have identified a number of issues, real issues, potential issues for separate financial statements of acquirer and acquiree. And we don't say you should not solve it, but again, to keep control of the project, our recommendation is focus on consolidate, collect all the problems for separate, and you may come to the conclusion that in phase two, you need to look specifically at separate. But as I said earlier, in a few months' time, we hope to issue a report which identifies a number of other issues on application of IFRS in separate as well. So maybe we're too much influenced by that knowledge we have already collected and say, hold on, keep an eye on it, but don't include it from the start. You may come to a conclusion that you need to put a separate financial statements project on the list, which would include this. So we're have their own experience that once you expand it to consolidate and separate, it almost explodes in your face.
Liesl?
More or less two footnotes. One, what is it the regulators want? Want they acquire role or acquiree? Because if it's an IPO, are they more
on
the side of the newly listed rather than the one getting rid of it? I'm not so sure how you can contain that easily, and it's not necessary what you heard around here, and it's too a question of when you want to have it. Do they want to have the best clean start for the IPO, which is somewhat difficult timing maybe. The only other footnote, Kevin said something about the Big Four and their manuals or practice or whatever. Strangely enough or not, it seems to be very much auditors asking for the project, and it seems to be a lot less preparers asking for the project. And I think that a lot of auditors are asking for help, support, arguments for or against or whatever. They might be old enough to know what they're doing, and they might be old enough to know what to tell their clients, but they're always looking for safeguards.
Kevin?
Just a question, why not transferor? Because if you do go to the spin-off issue, the transferor accounting is going to be critical. That's where the regulator's interest is.
In the separate financial statements of the transferor?
Consolidated at least. You know, the arbitrage you get between distributing the shares in the spun-off entity and the fair value of the net assets transferred
generates a difference. And whether you're taking book values or fair values against that, fair value of the entity gives you different answers as well. And, you know, just if you think of the transferee and, you know, whether they're getting an equity injection or a gain, the transferor has got the same issue. Are they having a loss or are they having a capital reduction? So I don't know why I would avoid transferor accounting. In spin-offs, you'll have to address it.
Julia, would you like to make some concluding comments? Are you completely at a loss now?
I'm really not entirely sure.
Well, if it's fine if you just want to let it sink in and think about it.
I think it would be helpful. It might be actually helpful to then listen into the discussion again to get it all together.
Yeah,
but I
there was certainly not a lack of perspective.
Yes, that is true. I do think, however, that it seems to me that the majority position is around the narrow scope. And there are some questions on the edge, like, is this just the acquirer, or is it also acquiree and transfer, or is it just separate consolidated? But at least I think the clear messages that I heard were that we shouldn't be looking at the broader issues of transfer pricing. I think that's probably one clear message. I think the other clear message is that we shouldn't be looking at, you know, very broad new basis issues, at least at this stage. So starting off with something narrower. But then within that narrow scope, I think there are still questions just how exactly narrow it needs to be. And that might be where we need to do some additional thinking.
And one interesting point, which probably a couple of them have made, is what if there are third parties involved in these business combinations under common control? So I think the information needs of the users might be a relevant driving force in the thought process in those transactions.
Alexander?
That's, being a minority here, let's make my point clear. Yes, it's for me, it's very important to have orientation on separate financial statements, because in my region, the separate financial statements have to be published and have to be audited. And the example that we gave here, both the parent company and the separate acquirer and acquiree have to publish financial statements. So if you lack IFRS guidance for those separate financial statements, the lack of IFRS guidance on separate financial statements is a major reason for criticism of adopting IFRS in the region. Mm-hmm. You say, well, IFRS is designed to consolidate the financial statements and do not apply to our jurisdictions because we have a strong focus on separate financial statements. So the main question in our region is not how to treat them on consolidated financial statements, it's how to treat them on separate financial, separate or individual. I don't like separate because it's assumed that this is really individual financial statements of the acquirer or individual financial statements of the acquirer. This for us is the main question.
Do we have an Iberian link here?
Well, just to support Alexandros' comments for the same argument. So for us, it would be essential that the project addresses not only consolidated financial statements, but also separate or individual financial statements.
Russ?
When I look at example two, I have a question. When you say separate financial statements, are you talking about A or S1 or both? So IP owned S, they spun S off to A, they're under common control because they're the common parent P, but when you say separate financial statements, so okay. P, is it A or S1?
In our literature, S1 would have individual financial statements and A would have separate financial statements.
So say again, please.
S1.
Yeah.
S1 would have individual financial statements because it's not, doesn't have any sub.
But Alexander, when you're saying, in your point, because if you kept it all at historical cost, it's not an issue, right? It's only if you have a step up somewhere in the family that you have a problem on separate financial statements.
And I think S1 is more to do with the acquiree's financial statements, because S1 here is the acquiree.
Right. But when you're saying, are you talking about S1?
It's confusing about the separate and individual financial statement. Let's put my let's forget the word separate and individual. Each legal entity has to present a financial statement.
Yeah. Yeah.
It doesn't matter what. If it's below a pyramid of companies, this is a loan, etc. Each legal entity has to present a financial statement.
So in the right-hand side of example 2, P, IP, A, S, and S1 all have to file financial statements.
But if P had historical costs, and A had historical costs, but S1 had new basis, wouldn't that cause a consolidation problem? You'd have to step it up and then unwind it?
You unwind it at the consolidated level.
Think of the opposite. On the right-hand side of example 2, if A acquires S1, think about the opposite. So imagine that the right-hand side is the initial situation, and the left-hand side is the resulting situation. So A acquires S1, and A has to prepare its individual financial statements or separate, etc. Then you have a new measurement basis of S1.
If A is unrelated, you would. In my opinion, if A is under common control of P, all it is P got some attorneys to just say move S1 over to A.
But maybe S1 and A have different minority shareholders, and they say, well, I do not care because A is acquiring S1, is acquiring a different company from that perspective. I'm not suggesting the answer. I'm just saying that this should be treated. Okay. If the answer is treated on cost accounting, historical cost, everything, it's okay, it's an answer. But I believe the answer must be provided.
Although we currently have requirement or guidance in our standards for the separate financial statements anyway, because if you buy the controlling interest in a subsidiary, you measure that either at cost or equity or fair value, so you've got a choice. But we actually do have requirements in there. That's the difference between that and business combinations under common control, where they're scoped out of three and there's a choice. So I think for us to address the separate financial statements, you'd be looking to see whether we should change the accounting requirements.
The point would be is, are you acquiring shares in a legal entity, which absolutely, you're right, there is is current guidance. But if, for example, A acquired the net assets comprising...
IAS 16 says that you...
No, but if it's a business, I'm saying which is your post-implementation review on IFRS 3, is that if that group of assets comprises a business, the accounting in A is separate. You've got the same issue as in A's, and I'm going to call them group accounts. In other words, picking up on Alexandro's point, if A has to prepare group financial statements because it's got different minorities, it has to either consolidate its subsidiaries, or it obviously has got those businesses that it acquired directly. So that's why, you know, if we're talking about A's separate, I agreed, it's different whether or not you're buying the shares or you're buying the net assets directly. So I think if I understand Alexandra's point, you're looking at A's separates.
Separates
if they've bought net assets as opposed to shares. And then if A has to prepare group financial statements, it's there consolidated. Clearly at a P level, your consolidated financial statements cannot change.
Much better explained than I did.
But at a lower level, they clearly can be done.
Well, at least this last part of the debate reminds me of several discussions we had in EFRAC about terminology. Group accounts, separate accounts, individual accounts. By the way, that is a legal term in European law. Consolidated account. Maybe just use one example of the tree to clarify from the very start what are we talking about. And well, since this is an IFRS project, probably consolidated versus separate as defined in IFRS is the best way forward, because otherwise you will have a lot of confusion already from the start of the research project.
Okay. I think that's it. Useful suggestions. Let's bring this to a close and take a break now until 20 to 11. Thank you, Julia.
Thank you. Yep.